What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 172 of the show. I am Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler as always. How you doing, Ben?
I'm all right, Carlos. I feel like my body and my brain are still coming down from the high and the rush of the WBC still. I feel like normally I'd be excited about, you know, spring breakout. And even then, it still feels like, I don't know. It's maybe because some of the rosters are so depleted from these, I don't know why MLB put out these initial player pool fake rosters.
It's good PR for them.
And then release the actual rosters. But either way, I don't know. I love the WBC. It was a great tournament. And, you know, look, it's like once every few years and you can't script the games. I don't know. Maybe some people think they are, but we just happened to get these great, close, dramatic games at the end. I mean, we got to see Paul Skeens face the DR. Like, that was just like a dream list item to see. That was an awesome game. Maybe not the greatest way to end the game, but it was just a great game. The Venezuela game against the U.S. in the final, like Bryce Harper's home run. I don't know how you
Oh man, that was maybe like the most iconic moment of Bryce Harper's career. I feel like maybe there's some other moments I'm not thinking about, but to see Bryce Harper, this like generational sort of prospect who has always been
in the true sense of generational, not the way every ninth player seems to be a generational player
level. Right, like actual like once in a generation, sort of like legitimately, not using that hyperbolically, absolutely, like this moment for him, it was just awesome to see, like turning a game that had really been kind of sleepy from the U.S. hitter side into this, like you said, like I feel like we just had close games consistently. I feel like baseball has just delivered in this tournament. I feel like it delivered in the previous WBC. Really, it feels like the last few postseasons we've had have also kind of consistently delivered. It feels like the tournament play and the games that have mattered at the highest stage have just been so good. Like baseball is in such an awesome place, and to see the Venezuela team win and the emotion that they had after the success, like especially considering all everything like the country has been through, and obviously those players have had to deal with a lot, like the biggest win in Team Venezuela, like their entire history as a baseball team, as a baseball country. It was just awesome to see. I feel like we got everything we wanted really to get from the World Baseball Classic. And if I wasn't like fully in previously, I definitely am now. It's just cool to see the emotion and the passion and like games that really matter in the middle of March, like prior to the season getting rolling. I just think it's a tremendous addition to the calendar. I think it's great for the sport. I just think it was great all around. It's an 80 for me.
I think, and it's great to have in March too. I don't understand the people who are talking about, oh, let's move it to the middle of the season around the All-Star break and like split up the tournament and put the the final eight teams in there. No, like you want to have anticipation leading up to it. You want it to be at a time when there's not much else going on the calendar. You're not going to get more player participation. Like teams are not going to want to have their, if the rest of the league is going to take a break, then they're not going to want to have their players use their in-season bullets. Then it's a much better time to have the tournament right now. I don't understand the desire for other people to say, oh, let's maybe it's more commercially advantageous for MLB to put it in the middle of the season. I don't know. So maybe they want to do that, but I think this is the best time of the year for it. I do think MLB should probably step in and say, like, hey, you can't have a situation where the Padres are calling USA Baseball or Mark DeRozan saying you can't use Mason Miller even though he's on the team and he's had a full day of rest. Like, if you want to have some restrictions and regulations of like, okay, if you're a reliever in the tournament, you can't pitch back-to-back days.
Right.
I get that. But I think MLB needs to step in and say, hey, no, if you're like, we're doing this for the good of our sport globally and to try to make, just to raise the tide of everybody here, we can't be having the Padres, and it just happened to the Padres. I'm sure, like most teams, I'm sure, are calling, you know, and it's not just the USA, obviously Venezuela, Dominican Republic, like these teams are all full of major league players too. Team Italy too, frankly, like there's a bunch of teams that this affects. So, but I do think it would be a better tournament if MLB can step in and tell these GMs and team presidents, like, hey, don't be doing that. Like, shut up. Cause that's what I would have been wanting to say if I was Omar Lopez or Mark DeRosa, one of these guys.
And this is kind of why I could be persuaded or more open-minded to changing the timing of the tournament. I know Jason Stark had an interesting piece where he was basically talking with Tarek Skubal about like potentially the benefits of doing it at the midseason at the All-Star break. And at least Skubal seemed to think that more pitchers would get buy-in at the midseason more because like there's this ramp up period, and he seemed to think that there were fewer injury concerns, and because there are fewer injury concerns with that timing, more pitchers and maybe more teams would be willing to have their players participate in the event. But I think I've just kind of ultimately come back to the idea that there's never going to be a perfect time for this sort of event, no matter where you put it on the calendar. And I do think that, like Jeff made this point in our Slack, like Team Japan doesn't have an issue running their pitchers out. You don't hear the Japanese pitchers kind of talking about pitch usage or restrictions in the same way that we do with pitchers who are tied to maybe MLB teams a little bit more often. You hear about that. So I do think it's probably just a case of like, okay, if you're in all the way. Like there's no hand-holding, there's no like restricted usage, like you're here for this, but you got to come back halfway through the event. Like it does feel like something where you're either in or you're out. And once you're in, you're going to be used like in a sensible sort of way. And I do think a good maybe like some guide rails here could be like the typical sort of pitch usage, pitch count limits you tend to get in international baseball events at other levels. Like that seems like a perfectly justifiable sort of addition to the tournament to maybe try and corral some aggressive managerial tendencies that you maybe wouldn't want. But at the end of the day, like there's always going to be these sort of mixed incentives. I don't think there's a way you can really get around it. And I do sort of think that the entire like sports world was on the WBC at this time before March Madness kicked off anyways. So I think you can kind of get a lot of positives from where it's at right now. And clearly the reactions and the spectators at the fields that we got to see, like clearly there was a ton of attention and there was just a different level of energy around these events that I wonder if is just tied to like, it's easier to go to a WBC than it is to a World Series. And that's kind of cool. Not that I think we have a bad environment at most World Series, but it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody at the DR Venezuela game. They're like, you could feel the whole building shaking. He's like, I thought about leaving because I
thought it was going to come down.
Thought like the structural foundation was not going to be able to hold the Dominican and Venezuelan fans just going absolutely nutty there. I wanted to talk about a lot of spring training prospects today.
Yeah, kind of the natural transition, right? Going to see what all the prospects are doing now. The spring breakout games are happening.
Probably some future WBC guys that we'll talk about today.
Yeah. Who's got you excited, Ben?
The shortstops, for sure. I mean, you got Leo DeVry.
Sorry for the people who hate shortstops.
Yeah, Leo DeVry with the Athletics. I guess kind of a him. Jesus Madé with the Brewers. Colt Emerson with the Mariners. Like,
yeah,
man, all three of these guys have been looking really, really strong, and no surprise. I mean, Leo DeVry, he's looked great, and he's also gotten a ton of playing time too, right?
Yeah, he looks more physical. I know there have been some stories coming out about just the added physicality that he's shown, just like the improvements to his body, but I thought he looked really good. Maybe this cliche best shape of your life sort of situation here, but
it should probably be the case.
He's performed well.
When you're a 19-year-old professional athlete, that you should be in the best shape of your life. Like, yeah, I'm in better shape now than I was when I was 17 years old. All right. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean,
and this is where like the strength is really going to start to become apparent this year, the next 2 years, really.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still coming into his physical prime, but they've given him 47 plate appearances already, which is a lot for a teenage shortstop, and he's hitting .409, .447, .682. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not getting carried away with spring training stats. It just stands out to me that he's been given that much playing time already in big league camp, and he's taking advantage of it. I mean, he just seems like he's not just in spring training, but just going back to last year too. He just seems like he's always on time. The feel for the barrel from both sides of the plate is just so good.
His left-handed swing in particular looks awesome. I think it's so nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's adjustable, it's whippy, it's so easy. A little uphill at times, but yeah, I mean, he's just a super talented hitter, and yeah, with some more strength, curious to see what the power is going to look like this year too. I don't think it's like it's not a red flag, but it's just there's a lot of confidence in his hitting ability. And then, okay, does he settle in as like 45 power, 50 power? Does he end up being a plus power guy? I mean, that's obviously the ideal, right? Like, if you end up being plus hit, plus power, and playing, I mean, at that point, it doesn't really matter where you play in the infield. And I don't exactly know where he's going to fit into that infield pitcher.
Well, I was going to ask you about that as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like you've been a little bit more maybe skeptical or just less enthusiastic about his shortstop defense compared to me. But again, if I'm misrepresenting you, let me know. But I thought he made a few pretty impressive plays defensively, but I also am not exactly sure how this infield is going to shake itself out in the future. I mean, I think Jacob Wilson is a really solid defensive shortstop as well. I think Leo DeVry might have a little bit more upside to be an impactful defender at the position, but again, I don't have issues with these shortstop log jams because they tend to sort themselves out. But have you seen enough of him this spring, I guess, defensively to change your opinion on him either way, or just like what is your kind of sense for his defensive skill in general?
I think he has the potential to play shortstop. I don't think he's a lock for shortstop. And again, it's going to come down to just the roster, right? Like, they have Jacob Wilson. Usually if you have an incumbent at shortstop who's good and he's signed to a long-term contract, you're probably not moving him off the position. And, you know, for this year, and I don't know that DeVry is going to come up this year, I wouldn't rule it out. But, you know, they do have McNeil at second base, but, you know, he's going to be, what, like 34 years old. He's not really the long-term fit there. So whether it's second base, third base, as long as Jacob Wilson is there, I think probably he ends up playing second or third. But if, you know, something happened to Jacob Wilson, could he step in and play shortstop? Yeah, I think he could do that.
Yeah, I just think he has all the physical tools there. It feels like most of the questions about DeVry at shortstop was kind of more of the consistency and sort of some of the finer aspects of the defensive game that I feel like typically come when you get more reps, when you get older, when you get a little bit more accustomed to the speed of the pro game. Like, there's nothing that he doesn't do that I'm like, oh, this aspect of his game maybe is not going to lend itself toward being a professional defensive shortstop. I could maybe even see a case where he pushes Jacob Wilson off the position, just because I think he's got a higher defensive ceiling. Like, I don't think Jacob Wilson is a sort of like Mason Wynn kind of defender who's like going to entrench himself at the position. And I think Jacob Wilson could, I mean, both these guys could go play other positions, but yeah, probably unsurprising that Leo DeVry, top 10 prospect in the game or thereabouts. I don't actually remember exactly where he slotted on our 100, but I know DeVry, Jesus Madejo, who mentioned Colt Emerson, I had them all stuffed up on my list. Yeah, it looks like Leo DeVry, we were just a little outside the top 10 with him. He's 12 on our top 100 right now.
Wow. Which, buried.
Yeah. We're light.
Made looks bigger and stronger too. I mean, you can see in the weight that he's put on, it's not like the weight that I've put on. It's a lot of muscle that you want to see somebody putting on going from age 18 to 19. And it's not like this was a guy who was lacking in bat speed or ability.
I was about to say, Ben, his bat speed is just shockingly impressive. I feel like sometimes bat speed is more apparent when you're live and in person, but the players where you can see like their bat speed is immediately obvious to you on videos is great. And also, quick rant here, I am so tired of seeing slow motion video of hitters. If you want to throw a slow motion video of a hitter at the end of your clip, do that. But I want to see the bat speed. Like, give me a regular speed video of a hitter. For all the people out there getting videos of hitters, please don't subject me to your ultra slow-mo video of hitters. It's great to see the hitting mechanics, I guess, but let me at least see the bat speed first.
Carlos doesn't have time to sit around.
No, wait for too much to do. We got 300 reports over here to write for next week. So,
well, with Madea, the exit velocities were already at a high end for his age, especially obviously for a shortstop, but then the pure hitting ability with him is so impressive. I mean, he's able to maneuver the barrel and cover the plate in a way that's just so uncommon to see. And he does it from both sides of the plate. And a lot of times the guys who can handle the bat head the way that he can, like, you know, they're more singles hitters, gap power. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be Made. He has the power potential to be a 25 plus home run guy. Now, I want to see with him, more so than with DeVry, what does the defense look like this year? Because I would love to see him prove that he can stick at shortstop. If not, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Like, he's put him at second base, put him at third base, no problem. It's still an all-star profile. But if he can play shortstop and be a shortstop who can hit and hit with that kind of power that he has, then we're talking about a potential superstar.
Yeah, and I feel like that defensive question for him is maybe even more important because it's not like his middle infield at the major league level are a couple of slouches with the glove. Like, he's going to have to be a very good defensive player to push one of those two off the position,
And Cooper Pratt ahead of him, too, right now.
Yeah, so figuring out that again, but this is going to be a scenario. If all of these players pan out and you want all these players in the lineup, that's a good problem to have. You can trade one of them. You'll have really good defenders at all three of your non-first base infield positions. Made is just, I mean, tremendously talented young player, one of the very best prospects in the game, a guy who it would be unsurprising if he slid into the number one overall prospect status at some point this season, just given some of the graduations we're kind of expecting to happen in front of him. I'm not at all concerned about like the spring training numbers at this point. Like, he's never a guy who struck out a lot. The swing does not at all look like it's going to be conducive to a lot of swing and miss, like you're talking about with his barrel feel. So
he hit over like 300 too. It's not like
he's hitting 310, 355, 379 with like higher strikeout rates and lower walk rates than you'd expect. But again, it's 12 games in spring training, so I have no real qualms or issues with those strikeout and walk rates. And yeah, I continue to be really excited about him as a prospect.
Yeah,
and he's top 10, top 15 shortstop prospects in the game. Hard to not get enthused about them.
Yeah,
and then Colt Emerson as well. You think he's in the same tier as these guys. I mean, all of our rankings kind of indicate that that is what we believe. So it'd be shocking if you maybe thought differently. And maybe he's got a quicker path to the majors than Made and DeVries.
He's definitely the closest to the major leagues. I like Made a little bit more as a prospect than Emerson, but I do like Emerson more than DeVries. Again, mm-hmm. I take these guys are all super talented.
Yeah, and I had it Made, DeVries, and Emerson back-to-back right inside the top 10. So there's basically no separation, but that was my order.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The ProNuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at ProNuvo.com. That's ProNuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with ProNuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit ProNuvo.com. That's ProNuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Yeah, it just looks so good. With Colt Emerson, just the swing is so quick. It's so direct. It's so efficient. The barrel accuracy is outstanding. Everything he does in the batter's box is like, when we talk about hitter-ish, like just go watch Colt Emerson. He's the mold of that. It's just so, it's so polished. It's so easy. It's so simple. We saw the exit velocities tick up last year too. It is a flatter swing pass. So I think there is above average raw power in there, and it's not like he's getting big or long with his swing to generate bat speed and power. But you could say because of the swing path, maybe he doesn't fully tap into his raw power. But then you could also say just because of how often he's hitting the ball on the sweet spot, you could argue it the other way where, yeah, he's going to barrel so many balls that he's going to produce home runs and slug beyond what his raw power suggests. So, and then with him on the defensive side, just like the defense keeps getting better. He's athletic. He's gotten quicker, more fluid, more comfortable at shortstop. I guess right now that's the question, right? Of where is he going to fit in on this roster? Cause I don't know how it's going to shake out. But
yeah, right now JP Crawford is dealing with a bit of a shoulder issue, and I guess that could potentially give him a window to get on the team quickly. I mean, do you think if there's a scenario where JP Crawford is just not ready to go for opening day, do you think Colt Emerson is a player that you would want to push this aggressively? I mean, he's played 6 games at the AAA level, just 34 games at the AA level in 2025. He spent that season across 3 levels. He also had a majority of his time at high A. He's only entering his age 20 season. But
21, right?
I believe last year was his age 19 season.
I guess that's how we classify the age seasons, which
I feel like it's always easier just to like say this is his age X season. I mean, he is 20. He turns 21 in July, so he's like a month after the cutoff that I think is typically used. It's like a June 1st birthday, so it's just an easy, quick, like, hey, here's the age.
I think we should change the cutoff. Like, you and I don't have the pull to do that, but I think
with that one.
The universal cutoff should be September 1st, because that makes it, that's usually when school cutoffs are, right, for high schools in the United States is September 1st. Obviously, like, there's some older kids in there, but it makes it even for high school players, and it makes it even for international players too, because that's the cutoff for international free agents. Instead, most places like Baseball Reference and stuff will use June 1st. Right, like the or July 1st, maybe. It's the midpoint of the year, so I understand that. But from a baseball purpose, when we talk about these age seasons, because Colt Emerson is the same high school class as...
It's June 30th. Sorry, I just looked it up. Players age at midnight July of June 1st, 30th yeah, of basically. That year, yeah.
Yeah, you were right. I was wrong. The midpoint through the year.
I mean, I think that makes sense. I don't have too much beef with it. Like, ultimately, a few months is not going to be a huge difference. Like, if I said he's entering his age 21 season versus age 20, like, I think my, like, intent of what I'm trying to express is still clear. And it's just nice to have an easy, like, quick shorthand. I don't think people are going to care if we're pulling up, like, date of births. It's just harder to, like, get that out on a podcast, you know?
Right, but I'm saying the way that, like, Baseball Reference should set the cutoff point should be September 1 for that. But I don't know. I can't fight City Hall on this one. But I do think, I would be comfortable putting Colt Emerson on the Major League roster right now. I think it's more of a question for the Mariners of, like, do you want to immediately start his service clock right now?
Probably
not. I think that's going to be that'll come into consideration. Now, if he wants to sign, I would love, if I'm the Mariners, to sign Colt Emerson to a long-term extension right now. Like, I'd feel more than comfortable doing that. Like, he's absolutely a player you want to keep, you know, well into his late 20s, lock up, get multiple team options on the back end there and pay him. Like, you're not going out, if you're the Mariners, as Jerry DePoto and all Mariners fans know, like, you're not going out and spending big money on free agents. You can argue they should, whatever. unless you're the owner, you don't have any power to be changing that. So, He's definitely a guy that I would prioritize signing to a long-term extension, especially, like J.P. Crawford is getting into his 30s. Like, he's not going to be there forever. But it is, if J.P. Crawford comes back and he's healthy, I don't know, like, exactly how he fits in the picture. He's got Cole Young at second base, even Brendan Donovan at third base. But I do feel confident that Colt Emerson can play a major league shortstop. I love him.
Yeah, he's very good. And you mentioned the power kind of conversation with Colt Emerson. What's encouraging to me is, I mean, in 2025, across 130 games in the minor leagues, he hit 16 home runs. He hit 28 doubles. And he did that while having a pretty all fields, ground ball heavy sort of batted ball profile. Like, if you wanted to critique Colt Emerson, like you mentioned, that's probably the area where you would do it. The swing is maybe not conducive to maximizing his power, but it's not like he was struggling to hit for extra base hits with the sort of swing and the approach that he has right now. So whether you're just always going to live with a guy who's getting to 16, 24 sort of range of home runs with all those doubles, or he's just one of those hitters who naturally will start to come into it a little bit more frequently, will start to lift the ball a little bit more in the future. I think regardless of, like, what that distribution of batted balls are, you're going to have just a very, very polished hitter who's going to hit for high averages, who's going to get on base a lot, who's going to have slug in some capacity, whether that's a ton of doubles or a few more home runs. But he's not a player that I'm concerned is, like, not going to be able to leave the yard. And so, like, just the fact that he was as productive as he was with the sort of angles that he's hitting the ball at right now, I think is a tremendous green flag for me, if anything.
What about Bryce Eldridge with the Giants? Do you have any questions on his power?
No questions at all about his power. No, I do kind of wonder if he's the sort of player, like, I think we're always going to have to live a swing and miss with Bryce Eldridge, right? Like, he's just one of these big, tall, longer levered hitters who just is kind of inherent in his game. I think that he could be a tremendously impactful hitter, even if he has, like, just a 40 grade pure hit tool and he's got strikeout rates near like 30%, like in the upper 20s, is hopefully what we're looking at with him long term, because I do think that the power is so massive and so game changing that he's just going to be one of these big sluggers who at any point can leave the yard and put some runs on the board for you. I'm still pretty high on him.
I saw Bryce Eldridge and Colt Emerson when they were teammates, when they were 14 years old, because I was at a game in Florida. There was an international prospect from the Bahamas who was there, who signed for a bunch of money. And I look over on the other field and I was like, who's this? Like 6 foot.
You're probably really excited about Bryce Eldridge pitching at that point, I'm sure.
Well, I looked over, I was like, who is this 6 foot six kid who's playing in this like 15U or whatever it was, 14U game maybe at the time. And it was Bryce Eldridge on the mound, probably throwing 88 at the time, and him, Colt Emerson. They had a few other guys on that team who were really good, but yeah, a couple big leaguers on the field that day, at least. But yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, he had 9 hits in spring training. 6 of those 9 hits are extra base hits. Yeah, he's also striking out 39% of the time. So it is spring training, but that is kind of the Bryce Eldridge experience, right? It's huge, huge left-handed power. But the question is going to be, can he keep the strikeout rate to a reasonable level? I think he will. Question of, should he start the year with the big league club? I don't know. I mean, he's 21 years old. He would be...
Mm-hmm. Is he in his age 21 season?
He is in his age 21 season. This would be his junior year of college. Like, he'd be at Alabama right now. He'd be teammates with Justin LeBron. So I don't think it'd be wrong to send him a AAA instead for a little bit more
Alabama
time.
Alabama could use his help, I think, right now. Need a little more help in that lineup with Justin LeBron. That would be a fun pairing.
They just flipped Chubb Jones from the 2027 class. That was surprise. Nice. Yeah, if you like 6'4", super whippy right-handed pitchers who throw 97 with a nasty slider and can run, play some shortstop too. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's wrong to send him to AAA for a little bit more time, but also there's probably just going to come some point where he's just going to have to learn at the major
league
level.
He'll have to figure out the strikeout concerns at the major league level. Yeah, he is a guy who's spent time in AAA in each of the past 2 seasons. Granted, it was only an 8-game stint in 24 when he was 19 years old, but then 66 games in 2025. I'm kind of inclined to be with you here. Like, I do think probably some more time in AAA could be useful. Yeah, but at a certain point, he's going to need just to be given a chance to do it in the major league level, and I still think he's one of the 20 most exciting players in the game, or prospects in the game.
The swing works well itself, and I think that there's going to be – I don't think it's going to be like a Spencer Jones level of swing and miss, right? Like, it was 29% strikeout rate last year in the minor leagues, and it was 31% in AAA. I see him settling into that high 20s strikeout rate in the big leagues eventually, and then you have the raw power there for 35, 40 plus home run guy in his best years.
Yeah, I do think he has a little bit more feel for the barrel. I think the swing is a little bit more conducive for more contact than Spencer Jones. The one thing as well with Bryce that I remain bullish on is just his defensive ability at first. I feel just surprised if that completely goes away, because he was so good as a defender, as an amateur at the position. Like, he was a legitimately good defensive first baseman, and I feel like he has not had that reputation in pro ball, and that's also an element of his game, maybe the least important aspect. Like, he can go kind of just stand over there at first base and be a big target, and it'll be fine, and his arm strength is probably a bit wasted at the position there. But it would be really surprising to me if he, like, continued to have this sort of below average first base defense profile. I feel like he's too athletic for me to believe that that's going to be the case, but I guess we'll see.
About Samuel Basayo with the Orioles, another guy with, I mean, he's
got his contract. He's ready to roll. I'd be excited to see a full season from him at the big leagues.
He has stupid power, man. He doesn't have to sell out his swing to get to the power either. Like, I love the combination of raw power, which, I mean, EV's up to 116 last year, so we're tickling 80 raw power. And just how he's able to generate that power to all fields with the way his swing works, his approach. So, I mean, he's not as tall as Bryce Eldridge, but he's 6'4". He's a bigger hitter. You would expect him to have a bigger swing, but it's pretty quiet. I mean, it's pretty quiet lower half, pretty quiet hands. Mm-hmm. He lets the ball travel, and then he has vicious bat speed. So if he's out front, he'll get those 116s to the pull side, or if he catches a little bit deeper, he can launch balls out to left center, middle of the field, and it just looks so easy too. He's having a good spring. It's 310, 394, 552. I think just the area to watch for him offensively is going to be the swing decisions, because we saw him get into some trouble with that when he got called up last year. But yeah, like he had just turned 21 years old and he was a young guy for the class. So maybe it was his age, I don't know, 19 season or whatever you want to call it in your terms, Carlos. But with players this young, I don't know if it all clicks for him right away in 2026, but yeah, long term, I have sky high expectations for him. Like the next WBC, I think Samuel Basayo should be supplanting Austin Wells as the catcher on Team DR.
Yeah, and I really like talking about Basayo and Bryce Eldridge kind of in connection with each other here, because I feel like they could wind up with very similar offensive profiles. Obviously, the catcher element maybe makes it a little bit different here. But in terms of their raw power, in terms of their swing decisions, their contact rates, just how they're going to create value offensively, I think they are fairly similar. Maybe Basayo has a little bit more on the bat-to-ball skill area, and maybe Bryce Eldridge chases just a little bit less frequently. But other than that, I feel like they are quite similar players. They're both players who can like mishit balls shockingly far out of the park, all field sort of juice, like potential to lead the league in home runs. This is sort of power upside they both have. And yeah, it'll be just fun to get a longer look at them at the major league level. And Basayo hitting 310, 394, 552 with a home run in 11 games in spring training. Looking pretty solid.
The other big long whatever power bat who's, I mean, we talked about him before, but Charlie Condon with the Rockies.
Yeah.
389, 452, 722, three homers, 36 trips to the plate this spring. I mean, is this the Charlie Condon redemption tour coming?
Yeah, and I'm looking at 46 plate appearances with similar numbers to what you just said. And yeah, still great offensive numbers. But I would love for the Charlie Condon redemption season, because again, this was one of the more impressive offensive prospects we've seen come out of college baseball. I mean, he was like the offensive player in college baseball's like peak offensive era, with the numbers that he produced. Like, I guess thank God that he was only there for 2 years, because I can't imagine the numbers he would have put up if he had 3 years in college baseball doing what he was doing. But I think if you're a Rockies fan and you've been maybe struggling with where the system is at, where the organization is at, seeing some of the early struggles of Condon, seeing some of the swing and miss questions with guys like Ethan Holliday, this spring has to be just massively encouraging for you. And I think, like we said last time, Charlie Condon, if he goes out and just shows that he's more of the hitter we expected him to be, it would be very easy to kind of flip the switch on him with his prospect status and maybe chalk up some of his first few stints in pro ball to just not being healthy, smaller samples. Like, sometimes guys don't click immediately, but tons of power. And if just the feel for hitting can come back a little bit, he's definitely one of these like middle of the order, can carry a lineup type offensive players. So I'm really excited to see what he's going to be able to do.
Yeah, we talked about Condon a couple of weeks ago, but I just think he's worth bringing up again because he keeps hitting. And I do wonder if this is the first time where we're really seeing him at full strength in pro ball, because he had a he had a home run at 115, which is 3 miles an hour harder than he hit a ball all of last year. And we still saw a lot of raw power from Charlie Condon a year ago.
Right.
But it came with a 28% strikeout rate and a slash line that was, it was decent, but not great, especially for a guy who moved to first base. Mm-hmm. But it was spring training last year when he hurt his wrist. Yep. He got injured diving for a ball, and then he didn't get back until late May. I don't know. Maybe the wrist was bothering him when he came back and it impeded his bat control. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you for sure that was the case with Charlie Condon.
Well, you even tend to hear that, like, just wrist and hand injuries for hitters, even outside of like barrel control, like it saps your power in a way that is like pretty consistent for these injuries. So if he lost some power as well, in addition to the bat control, it wouldn't be shocking given that injury. And again, this is a guy who his exit velocity and his raw power was neck and neck with Jack Caglione coming out of college. And so I do think he has the potential to be like at the very top of the elite power hitting prospects in the game if he's healthy.
I can't tell you for sure that that was the case with Condon last year. I just know that we have seen over the years young athletes who think they're invincible or who just want to play, even if they're having to play through pain or they don't want to tell the team or, you know, about or their coaches about any aches and pains that they're dealing with. So I hope we're just seeing right now like a fully healthy Charlie Condon and seeing the true Charlie Condon right now, because some of the swings that he's putting on balls right now look great. I mean, he was a monster in college, but his stock had to fall last year just after the season he had moving to first base. But if he hits the way that, you know, I expected for him to hit coming out of Georgia, I'm sure the Rockies did too, you can put him at first base, you can put him at DH, and it doesn't matter. That's not going to be an issue. But I am going to have to see a couple months of this during the regular season before I'm really buying in. But I am very intrigued right now. I am very intrigued.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit bummed that the first base move has come so quickly. And I think maybe you could make a case that if you're not fully healthy and you're also struggling offensively, maybe it makes some sense to put this prized offensive prospect at first base just because you have less to worry about and think about there. And you can just focus on hitting and maybe not put yourself in a position to get hurt again. I don't know if like this is, he's definitely only going to play first base moving forward. It feels like that could be the case. He's again, just a guy that we saw play so many different positions. And while I never thought he was going to be like a big league third baseman, probably, I did have more of an optimistic outlook about him potentially moving around well enough to play left or right field. And so I wonder what sort of defensive responsibilities he's going to have moving forward, if that's still going to be an element of his game or if it's just, hey, you're a first baseman now, go bang. So that's maybe the other element too that's interesting here.
Yeah, he went third overall in the draft that year, 2024. The guy who went first overall, Travis Bezzano with the Guardians. He's having a nice spring too. Not a huge sample, but
he got some World Baseball Classic time in there.
Yeah, yeah. What do you make of Travis Bezzano coming into the year?
Yeah, really good hitter. I was hoping that he maybe would have a chance to win the second base job out of camp. Maybe was a little bit bullish and optimistic of me, given how Cleveland tends to work with their prospects. But I do think that if you look at this kind of projected Guardians 2026 lineup, shortstop and second base are the areas where you can have some clear offensive upgrades. I don't know that like second base is a position that like Travis Bezzano couldn't push right now. He didn't have a fully healthy 2025 season and he dealt with some kind of growing pains in that season. But I think as we talked about this past winter, like my view of Travis Bezzano as a hitter and as a prospect really hasn't changed all that much, because all of his underlying skills, the swing, the contact rates, the impact, the speed, like all of that is just as good as I thought it was going to be for him coming out of the draft. I think he has improved with the throwing at second base enough to be like a solid defender there. So yeah, he's a rock solid player. And I do think that he's a guy who, I just wonder how long he's going to be in the upper levels of the minors if he goes there and he keeps hitting, because I feel like there's a clear need for some more offense in this lineup at his position. It's a team that I would expect to still be competitive. He's looked really good.
Yeah, the numbers overall last year were probably not what you would you were hoping for if you were the Guardians, right? But how much of that was maybe oblique injuries that he was dealing with? Like, did we really see him at full strength last year, do you think?
Definitely not for the first half of the season, I don't think. And I think it did lead to some kind of mechanical tweaks because of that he kind of had to rework. And I think we talked about as well, like him just getting used to left-handed pitchers who could throw spin in the zone against him was something he had to kind of figure out. But I think he made those adjustments. But yeah, if you look at his like service level stat line and you compare him to guys like JJ Weatherholtz, who was always been compared to in that draft class, and JJ Weatherholtz has a clear major league job at this point. I think all the underlying numbers for Bezzano are really encouraging. He's still hitting the ball hard. He's still making a ton of contact. He makes a ton of contact in the zone. He's still a guy who pulls the ball with a lot of frequency, and so I think he's going to be able to tap into all of his power. Yeah, just very similar sort of profile I expected him to have coming out of college. I still think is what he has. And it was like, hey, you got injured early in the year, got into a bit of a funk, then you got out of it. The line is not what we want to see, but fortunately we have a lot more information than just like the surface level line to feel pretty good about what he's doing right now. So that's kind of where I'm at with Bisogna. Hope he gets a big league shot soon.
First overall pick out of Oregon State, 2024. Maybe they get another one in 2027 with Dax Whitney. Although Brendan Lawson looks pretty good too.
Yeah, we talked a few weeks ago. I was like, oh yeah, Dax Whitney, no more prospect in next year's class. Mark it down. Then like this past week, Brendan Lawson has like a 1500 OPS. Is like hitting everything.
That probably lowered his OPS.
Yeah, he's been absurd. He's like top five offensive performer in the country right now versus strikeout leader on the other side. So do you prefer the super physical left-handed hitting shortstop who's just absolutely doing it? Or do you prefer the big righty with a four pitch mix, fastball up to 100, high spin breakers? Picking up the top is going to be pretty fun next year.
He's a 48% strikeout rate as a sophomore. Oh my god!
Yeah, he's absurd. I think he's still leading the country in strikeouts, either first or second, but I think he's first.
Yeah. Is Liam Peterson right behind him? For all your...
I think he's a little bit off. I think there are four players who are 50 plus strikeouts. I'll have to check this list. It's like Mason Edwards, Dax Whitney. I'll pull it up and tell you the exact list of players.
Peterson's at 44. I know he has a 44% strikeout.
What a bum.
Rate. Yeah. Although, not going to listen to the Peterson panickers out there.
This podcast. Let's see here. Our strikeout leaders in 2026 in college baseball are, if I can get this to load. Yeah. Dax Whitney, 54. Mason Edwards, 52. That's USC for Mason Edwards, Chris Lavonis at Wake Forest, 51, and Ruger Riojas at Texas, the senior who has made a jump and stuff at 50.
That's good company.
Yeah, pretty good list of players. Liam Peterson all the way down in 10th. Well, I guess he's tied for like 8th at 44. Yeah, Liam's been good. I know we're kind of tangent, like getting into draft stuff. He scares me still, though. I mean, I just need him to throw more strikes. The stuff is maybe the best in the class. No one can hit any of the secondaries that he's throwing. I just wish he could throw it over the plate a little bit more often.
I think
2.84 ERA, 5 starts, 25 innings, 44 strikeouts, 14 walks. Yeah, he has good stuff.
Strikeout rate's better than Jackson Flores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not talking to the Jackson Flores 1-1 guy here. I'll tell you that. Well, Jackson Flores is good, but I'm still waiting on the Jackson Flores lab performance too.
I don't think anyone's going 1-1 other than that.
Yeah, we got
young man at UCLA.
Rock Chalowski's yeah, pretty good. Yeah, Will Gasparino.
maybe that's
What about kind of going back to pro stuff? Another Guardians prospect, Ralphie Velasquez.
Yeah,
he's another guy I feel like who, if you're just looking at the stat line, maybe in recent years, you're a little underwhelmed, but the inputs for him, the batted ball profile has always been pretty exceptional. And it sounds like he's having a nice spring too.
I think the slash line, I mean, he got to double A at the end of last year and it was 28 games, but 330, 405, 589 as a 20-year-old. I think that was quite whelming to me.
I feel like his 2024 line, people were like, I feel like you have to hit for more power. So maybe, yeah, not 25 specifically, but just like historically, Ralphie is a guy who I know there have been some questions like, oh, is he going to get to his power? But like everything that he does under the hood and how hard he hits the ball, like never made me too concerned about him getting to the power. But you're right. The 25 line is really rock solid.
I do recall conversations we were having in 24, his first year out the draft out of high school, his first full season, mm-hmm. where I was saying we need to put him in the top 100. I think we did put him in the top 100. And then we were getting feedback from scouts. Oh, move him down, take him out. I don't remember. Maybe some question about the swing or something that I very vehemently disagreed with. And I think it's just a great combination of hitting ability and power.
Yeah,
look,
we ranked him 62 in 2024. I don't know if this is the preseason list, but on our top 100 list, he's been 62, then 91. Now he's back at 56 this year. So,
yeah, as a first baseman, you do have to rake, but there's just no major red flags for me in his offensive profile. He's a pretty complete hitter. I like the left-handed swing. It works well. He has good plate coverage, big power. I mean, this is what you want your first base prospects to look like. And yeah, not a big sample in spring training, but, you know, he's hitting well, not striking out much. This is what you're going to get from Relvilla. It's not like Bryce Eldridge where...
I was about to say, like, I feel like we talked, like, we praise universally the raw power that Bryce Eldridge and Samuel Basayo, and I don't know why I continue to lump in Samuel Basayo as a first baseman here in these conversations. Maybe in my head there's still some, like, first base outcomes here, but Rafi Velasquez makes significantly more contact and has a much better understanding of the strike zone, at least to this point in his career, than those two. So if you wanted to make a case and say, like, Ralphie should be far closer to the Bryce Eldridge of the world, I don't think that would be crazy either, frankly.
He's really good.
A very good pure hitter, and on top of being incredibly strong.
Yeah, arms probably just as good as Bryce's.
Good arm, too.
To it, kind of wasted both of them at first base, but
it always sucks when you got a plus arm sitting there at first base.
Yeah, and if only there was something else we could use that arm for Bryce Eldridge.
No.
What about AJ Ewing with the Mets?
That's your guy.
He's been looking great. He's been looking great for a while. He just keeps looking great. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Mets beat everyone on this guy. He's a fourth round pick out of high school in 23. I mean, we're talking about a lot of 23 draft picks today. Eldridge.
It's a good class. Emerson, good class.
Ralphie. But, I mean, fourth rounder who got $675,000. The Mets could have paid him double that. Somebody probably should have, and it still would have been a bargain. He was actually an Alabama. Yeah, he was an Alabama commit, too. He could have, well, he was originally Wright State, and then I think he ended up flipping later in the process because he was a kind of like a later riser to Alabama. So in an alternate universe, Alabama right now has Justin
AJ Ewing and Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah, and those two guys. But I don't know. Tough Alabama fans not loving that right now. But it's 381, 423, 667 in 26 PAs this spring. And he's a top 100 prospect. He got the double A last year as a 20-year-old. He hit well there. Just a really good left-handed swing, disciplined approach. There's not huge power there, but it is quality contact. So you've got a center fielder who's probably plus.
Good secondary tools, runs really well, good defender, good arm.
Attributes are there to be a high OBP threat. I mean, he's number 83 on our top 100 right now. I have a feeling that's going to be the lowest he ever ranks going forward before he graduates on our top 100.
There you go, Mets fans. Congratulations to you on AJ Ewing. Yeah, he's been really good. I don't have too much to add beyond what you said there. So kind of keep it moving, but fun player.
Yeah, him, Joshua Baez with the Cardinals. Just nice to
continue to see him performing and make us feel more confident that the changes last year were just real changes, you know?
Yeah, it's just more signal, I think, that what we saw last year from him is not just a one-year fluke. What we saw in 2025 was there were significant changes, his swing, his approach, and like then ultimately to the production in games too.
How about him for the big leagues? I mean, he's only played 79 games in double-A. He's not a guy that I think would like you need to rush quickly, but I do feel like just given where the Cardinals are at, one of the nice things is you can give your prospects just a whole lot of run to figure things out at the major league level without the pressure of like, hey, we need to win games right now. So if you got like a really long extended look at Baez in the majors this year, I think that'd be cool to see. I mean, he'll be entering his age 23 season. So
yeah, I know there are Cardinals fans who want to see Joshua Baez in the major leagues right now, and you can make a case that like maybe he is one of their best outfield options right now, but the Cardinals are doing the right thing here. I mean, he has 79 games in double A. He's going to start the year in triple A, and that's where he should start the year. He's not the type of player, as much as I like him, he's not the type of player that should be skipping AAA. I think he's the type of guy that you want him going ideally level by level. And if he's lighting up AAA during the season, then by the All-Star break, I mean, yeah, we're going to see him making his major league debut this year. So, I just remember going back to Like, there was a point mid-season, maybe last year, where we were saying, hey, this guy, like, I know he wasn't a top 30 Cardinals prospect for us coming into the year, but when you compare what he's doing and the way he looks doing it versus other outfielders we have in our top 100, like a Braden Montgomery, should Joshua Baez be in the top 100? And ultimately we decided, yeah, this is a huge jump, but this is a player who has also made huge changes. And we never really had questions about the tools with him, nope. Especially not the power or the arm strength. And I think what he's doing in spring training right now, I mean, 333, 762 slug, he had 3 home runs before he got sent down, like 6 strikeouts and 24 plate appearances is fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's just another good sign that things are just trending the right way for Joshua Baez.
Yeah, agreed. You mentioned Braden Montgomery with the White Sox as well. I feel like there are a number of White Sox players that are kind of interesting to talk through now. But Montgomery has also hit well in spring training. He's got a home run. He's got a couple of triples. He's hitting 348, 652 in 12 games. Hasn't walked at all. Struck out a quarter of the time. But any thoughts on him or maybe more on Sam Antonacci, who we've talked about a decent number of times, I feel like, recently. But different, vastly different profiles, but both interesting hitters in this system.
Yeah. Braden Montgomery is a good prospect. I don't think he's a great prospect. What I like with him is the athleticism, the arm strength, bat speed, power. Mm-hmm. Where I do get concerned is it is more corner outfield than center field. And the strikeout rate wasn't alarming. It was like 25%. But then on a per pitch basis, the swinging strike rate was high, and it gives me fear that the strikeout rate overall is going to climb once he, now that he's getting out of A ball, right? Especially with an aggressive swinging approach. Like you mentioned, he hasn't walked yet in spring training. That's, I mean, he'll walk.
He swung almost half the time.
That's
a year ago, which is his chase rate was actually better than I would have expected it to be a year ago with that sort of frequency of swinging. But I do wonder if that's going to continue to climb as he faces just better pitchers. I do have some similar concerns here, but
I like him. I just think, to me, he's like, we have him in our top 100, and I don't think he's like wrong to be in there. I know there are White Sox fans and, you know, probably other people too, who think he's more of a top 50 guy than just, you know, back of the top 100.
No,
to me, I think he's more of a,
I don't think so.
I think he's more of a borderline top 100 guy. And I think I'm more in the lower camp relative to most people. On him.
Have to check exactly where I placed him on my list because I have it up now, and now I'm curious.
It's gonna be. Like
I had him at 67. No, I didn't have him as a top 50 prospect either. I had him at 67. I kind of share the same sort of thoughts you have. Really exciting tool set. Really exciting power, bat speed, athleticism, arm. Do you think he's like a limited defensive outfielder? Because I think he could be a pretty good defender in a corner.
I think it's more corner than center field.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Antonacci, I mean, it's going to sound weird because I'm not even saying Antonacci is necessarily a better prospect than Montgomery, although I think you can make a case that he is, but I think he's going to sneak up on more people than Montgomery, who's just like, you know, obviously more draft pedigree and louder tools, bigger name and all that. But Antonacci's a really good player. Like, it's just not the sexiest tools, but he saw the WBC, just like a very smart heads up player, high bat to ball guy, able to maneuver the barrel, a lot of adjustability, good swing decisions, all the traits there to be a high OBP guy. He'll sneak you maybe 10, 15 home runs in there. I don't think he's I don't want him at shortstop, but I don't think he's really going to play there for the White Sox anyway and fit in there, but if they can put him at second base, I think that's a great fit for him. And then you look up and realize, oh, this guy ended up putting up a 2 WAR, maybe 2-3 WAR type season in some years. So I like him as like a, keep using the word sneaky for him, because I don't know, he's not like a big profile guy. Like, the tools aren't that loud, but it's just like a good player where the sum of the parts ends up being a pretty valuable everyday guy.
Yeah, we don't have the loudest run grades in the world for a guy who stole 48 bags in the minors. I wonder if he can run around well enough to be sort of like a, I don't know if he's entirely a super utility kind of guy, because ideally you'd want that guy to be able to play maybe shortstop or some center field. But I wonder if he's like this, play him at second, third. He has the instincts to play corner outfield maybe as well. I know he has experience at a number of different positions, and because he does everything at such a high level on the baseball field, I wonder if that is a potential role for him where you can really just kind of piece him into your lineup wherever you might need him on a given day. I'll be really curious to see what the defensive reviews of him are going to be this year, because I do think ultimately that's my biggest question is like, how is he going to profile if he's not an up the middle player in some capacity? Because he just does not have a ton of power, but he does control the zone. He makes a ton of contact. He walks a lot. He's going to get on base. Just a fun player, a different sort of profile, a unique profile, but a guy who's, I mean, dating back to his draft year, he just continues to perform and perform and perform. So at some point, the performance kind of bears itself out and really matters. So, yeah, he's a good one.
Performance is going to be key for Hagen Smith this year, too. I mean, just some of the stuff he's showing.
Spring training has been fun for him. I guess it's very limited sample, but.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, he's faced 17 batters. He struck out 8, only one walk. That's refreshing after after last year when he walked 18% of guys.
Yep.
I mean, this stuff has looked good, too. I mean, he's sitting 95, 96. He's flashing a nasty slider. But, I mean, he walked 56 guys in 75 and two-thirds innings last year in Double A. Like, this stuff is good, but I don't know. I'm not giving any expert analysis here that you can't be walking that many guys.
Right. Yeah. I'm very excited about the developments from Hagen Smith's spring. And it's mostly to do with just this new cutter he's shown. I mean, we need him to find just in general more pitches he can throw in the zone for strikes. Like, no one is questioning the quality of his fastball and slider, basically going back to his high school days. Like, those have always been really impressive pitches for him. He gets a lot of swing and miss. It's a unique angle. The slider has a ton of movement and bite and can get chases out of the zone. But he doesn't have a non-fastball that he threw in the zone more than 50% of the time. At least a year ago, he didn't have any of that. And I do wonder if this new cutter that he's toying with could like help him get in the zone a little bit more frequently. Hagen Smith is a guy who we've kind of wanted to see a third pitch from him in some capacity as well. I thought it was just going to be the changeup that he's thrown. I mean, that has flashed in the past, but is also just a pitch that he doesn't seem to have a ton of feel for. So the fact that he does have a new pitch, and I think a cutter, it tends to be a pitch that's a lot easier to throw in the zone for strikes for a lot of these pitchers. So I really wonder and hope that that can sort of unlock a little bit more control for him, help him stay in counts, get ahead in counts more frequently to make the slider a little bit more effective. Cause it's maybe a double plus pitch at its best. And I've long been pretty bullish on Hagen. I just love the way his arm works. I love the athlete. I love the pure stuff. And when you see him right, it is just an overwhelming left-handed pitcher on the mound. So I'm very hopeful. And the fact that there is like something I can point to and say, hey, maybe this will like help unlock him, I think is encouraging to me. If he was just like showing the same pitch mix and was just like, he hadn't walked someone in, what is it, like 3 innings or so, maybe I'd be less excited about it, but still hopeful. But that's something I'm like, circling that, like, let's circle back and see what the cutter is looking like if he continues to throw that this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be all about the strikes this year for Hagen Smith, because this, when he was on, like, when he was at his best, especially coming out of college not that long ago, like, it looked like Carlos Rodon. Not hard to dream on that outcome for him, but obviously just needs a lot more strikes.
Another pitcher who's shown an interesting addition to the arsenal this spring, and a pitcher who needs it, Braves righty Didier Fuentes. He's been pretty dominant in spring training as well. I don't know that he's allowed to hit or walked anyone. He struck out a ton of batters.
No, he's got it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he struck out, what was it? It was like some ridiculous number of hitters that he's 9 strikeouts and 15 batters that he's faced. No hits. He did hit a guy, but no walks otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been really good, and it looks like he's added some more power to the slider. He's throwing a harder slider right now. I think for me, like, Didier Fuentes has an outlier sort of fastball shape, and the fastball for him has always been the carrying pitch, a pitch that misses a ton of barrels, has that sort of really flat approach angle, and he can just dominate when he's putting that at the top of the zone or in the upper third. And then you saw, like, what can go wrong with his pitch mix a year ago at the major league level when, to be clear, he was there as a 20-year-old at the time and maybe pushed a little aggressively considering he started the season with no experience beyond the low A levels of the minors. Like, it was a rapid ascension to the major leagues. But if he's not locating that fastball and he doesn't feel like he has a quality secondary to keep hitters off the fastball, like, major league hitters are going to be able to handle his fastball, even though it is an outstanding pitch. And so for him, the question was always, hey, can you get to a quality, consistent secondary? He's toyed with a sweeper slider in the past. He's toyed with more of a gyro slider. He's experimented with a splitter, with a curveball. And it's felt like for a few years now, nothing has really clicked. And so if this new, like, harder slider he's throwing is that pitch, all of a sudden, like, one of the biggest questions about Didier is now answered. I think you also are just going to want to see the fastball command be solid moving forward. He's always been a pretty strong strike thrower in the control department, just historically. But I think just pitching with that fastball to its strengths from a shape perspective is going to be important for him. But super encouraging spring training for Fuentes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just like he does have, you know, like you said, good extension and the ride on the fastball too. It's also not like it's not like Owen Murphy too, where he's, you know, throwing the low 90s. Like, it's a power.
It's a hard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just a pure shape sort of fastball, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's dialing it up to the upper 90s at times. So, yeah, I mean, just to see him fly through the minor leagues last year, starting the year in A-ball, finishing the year in the big leagues, is impressive. Do you lean more now toward longer reliever long-term with him? What do you think is going to be his best role?
I think he's always shown the control to be a starter, actually. It's more just like the quality of the secondaries was always my question. And the fastball command in particular was a question because, again, like, if you don't have the depth of arsenal to attack hitters with multiple pitches, you really don't have much margin for error with the fastball because everyone's going to be sitting on it. And so you need to locate it effectively. But if you look at him in the past, like, he's always had a walk rate around like 8-9%. I think that's more than good enough for him to start. It's just, you don't see pitchers who have like a single pitch. And for a while, I think that was a question with him. I don't necessarily think he needs multiple plus secondaries. The fastball could potentially be a 70 grade pitch moving forward. If he can get the slider to like an above average level and just show enough of the splitter and enough of the curveball to keep hitters off balance, I think that would be enough for like a number four sort of role with upside to be a little bit more than that. So no, I'm not too concerned about him from like a reliever perspective. I do think he would have a nice fallback option as a reliever because I think the fastball could play pretty well out of the bullpen. But for me, it's purely like, do you have the secondaries to work through a lineup a few times and just keep major league hitters questioning what's coming?
Yeah, Fuentes, Murphy, J.R. Ritchie, Cam Caminiti. Mm-hmm. See what happens with Briggs McKenzie this yep. year. Got some interesting arms.
Good arms, as always, for the Braves, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those two pitches, the Hagen-Smith cutter and the Fuentes slider, are definitely going to be pitches I'm honed in on as we move forward. Really interesting additions. Mm-hmm. Cool. Any other prospects, or you want to wrap for this week?
Yeah, save some for next time. Probably talk some more draft talk next time too.
Yeah. Yep. Big update coming, so I got to get back to that at some point. But yeah, that's going to wrap us up for today. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting Baseball America as always. If you want to rate and review the show wherever you're listening to your podcast, that'll be really helpful. Get the show in front of more people. We love doing it, and we appreciate you guys supporting and listening and hanging out with us and talking some baseball. So for Ben, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.